WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. For the first time, Washington and Lee faculty vote to remove Robert E. Lee from the school's name. Expensive private schools and some Virginia politicians were among those approved for loans under the government's payroll protection program. And we kick off our special summertime series on mental health matters and explore the pandemic's dilemma for mental health. As the need for therapies grows, access gets harder with restrictions on social contact. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, July 7th. For the first time, faculty at Washington and Lee University voted Monday to remove Robert E. Lee from the school's name. The motion has been sent to the Board of Trustees, but a university spokeswoman said the board does not plan to make a change. The school was named for George Washington, an early benefactor, and Lee, the former Confederate general and president of the university, who was buried in the chapel at the heart of campus. Washington and Lee University is the school's fifth name since 1749. The three permanent black faculty members at W&L's law school called for the removal of both Washington's and Lee's names. James Madison University is further postponing its spring commencement ceremony. JMU cited public health concerns over the ongoing pandemic and the governor's restrictions on gatherings over 250 people. JMU had postponed the usual May ceremony until August. Like most other colleges in our area, the school plans to reopen on schedule in August, but with altered plans and a shortened semester for on-campus instruction. Shenandoah University in Winchester announced Monday it would reopen campus for the fall semester in late August. Expensive private schools, IT and defense contractors, and companies linked to Virginia elected officials, some of those who were approved for loans under the federal government's payroll protection program. Virginia's businesses and nonprofits took in at least $9.5 billion through the U.S. Treasury Department program, according to data released Monday. Nearly 110,000 PPP loans were awarded in Virginia, with the vast majority of them under $150,000. Companies linked to elected officials also received loans. State Senator Chap Peterson of Fairfax said the PPP loan to his law firm helped him keep 12 people on payroll, cover rent, and pay his vendors. Governor Ralph Northam's former medical practice, which he owns a stake in, received a loan of between $2 to $5 million. Northam, a pediatric neurologist, is not involved in the practice's day-to-day operations and played no role in their loan application, his spokeswoman said. Under the PPP, the government is backing $659 billion in low-interest business loans that will be forgiven if employers use the money on payroll, rent, and similar expenses. Several Democrats have already announced their candidacies to run for governor next year, and more may be on the way. But the excitement is not as prevalent on the Republican side. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
So far, only one Republican has announced her campaign for governor, State Senator Amanda Chase, whose tensions with the Republican Senate caucus became so heated she actually left the caucus before the General Assembly session started this year. Republican strategist Dan Scanling says any candidate for governor needs to make it clear where they are in the party.
I think the real question for Republicans becomes, am I running as a Trump candidate or am I running as the anti-Trump and I'm putting the pieces back together of the Republican Party?
He says Chase is with Trump, but that leaves space with traditional conservatives, people like former State Senator Bill Carrico of Galax, who's considering throwing his hat into the ring. Former Delegate David Ramadan is now at George Mason University's Schar School.
He is a traditional conservative Republican and will make a good candidate. However, I don't see how any Republican, regardless how good of a candidate they are, can win with the current numbers in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads.
Several Democrats have already announced their campaigns for governor. And former Governor Terry McAuliffe is frequently mentioned as a possible candidate who has yet to announce. Michael Pope.
Sales of firearms in Virginia soared to historic levels in June. The Virginia Firearms Transaction Center reported more than 81,000 transactions last month. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports that the sales were the highest monthly total on record since state police began tracking purchasing data back in 1990. The number represents a 157% increase over sales in June of 2019. Virginia firearms dealers say the surge in sales began with fears over gun restrictions from the new Democratic majority in the General Assembly. Then came the coronavirus pandemic and fears among some people of a breakdown in public order. That was followed by the widespread protests against police brutality and calls by racial justice advocates to decrease funding for police departments. Finally today, COVID-19 has created a dilemma for mental health. The pandemic has increased the need for such care. At the same time, social restrictions have made access to mental health services even more burdensome. Add to that the economic downturn and the renewed battle for racial justice, and we're looking at a potential crisis of depression and anxiety. In the first of a series on mental health matters during a pandemic, WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
The American public's happiness has reached a five-decade low, according to a study from NORC at the University of Chicago, a nonpartisan research organization.
It's a crisis time in our country, and so people should not feel guilty or feel bad for feeling like totally overwhelmed and concerned and anxious and sad.
Joanne Henderson is a licensed professional counselor based in Harrisonburg.
And then, you know, all the killings of African Americans on top of it has just, it's just exploded the fear and rage in our country.
When Virginia shut down in response to the pandemic in March, private and public mental health care providers alike scrambled to find safe ways to serve their clients. George Knipe is the senior manager of adult outpatient services at the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Community Services Board, or CSB, one of the 40 publicly funded providers of mental health, substance abuse, and developmental disability services in Virginia.
As we were able to adjust to do things like therapy sessions over the phone or therapy sessions over video conferencing, we saw attendance and participation go right back to kind of normal rates.
In fiscal year 2019, the Harrisonburg-Rockingham CSB served over 5,400 individuals. The Region 10 CSB, which serves Charlottesville and Albemarle, Fluvanna, Greene, Louisa, and Nelson counties, served more than 6,000 adults and 3,000 children during that time. They too saw a drop in participation at the start of the pandemic, but are now back to working with their usual number of clients. Lori Wood is their Senior Director of Emergency Services and Short-Term Stabilization Services.
We met regularly every day for a few months just to make sure we were reviewing all the CDC guidelines and other workplace guidelines so that we were really in line with how we could continue to serve people in the safest, most effective way.
Both CSBs have used a combination of phone, video conferencing, and socially, or maybe more precisely, physically distanced in-person methods to continue offering the majority of their services. One of the challenges they've had to navigate is providing telehealth in a secure way to clients who don't have a private space in their home.
Sometimes that means they go to the park, or they find a trail, or they create a quiet space in their home, or in a car, or wherever they can find that.
George Knipe noted that even having a reliable internet connection is a struggle for some of their clients.
They want to participate and have that face-to-face contact, even if it is virtually, and then, you know, the connection slows down or cuts out. Any kind of contact and being able to have the interaction, I think, makes a difference.
I am a very social person.
Brenda Diaz-Castro, a teacher assistant at the Woodland Montessori School in Harrisonburg, has definitely felt that isolation.
And I feel like there were certain things I used to do that helped me feel more grounded and like made me feel like I had a purpose. Like working at Montessori was a really positive thing for me. Going to shows and hanging out with friends was something that helped me feel really strong in myself too.
Since the pandemic started, she's increased her therapy sessions from every 2 weeks to once a week.
Having therapy once a week helps me stay grounded. And now that with the protests going on, all the police brutality happening, I have found that talking to my therapist has helped me sort through all the feelings that come up.
Diaz-Castro has been supporting these local protests. She pays for therapy out of pocket, and her therapist has set a rate that she can afford. I heard from other Shenandoah Valley residents about their own situations. One said his therapist has seen him pro bono throughout the pandemic, but another said his insurance didn't cover telehealth, so he hasn't been receiving therapy, which then jeopardizes his access to medication. Not having access to mental health services is especially dangerous during this time when so many of us are isolated. Lori Wood said that the Region 10 CSB in Charlottesville has seen an increase in rates of both addiction relapse and suicidal thoughts, also called suicidal ideation, among their clients.
Hope for the future and confidence and in moving forward, that has been difficult for people to hold on to during this time. And so there's been an uptick in calls for service for people with suicidal ideation, for folks with anxiety and depression.
Kimberly Lester is a technical writer for a local software company. She's been meeting with her therapist more often in the past few months, first over video conference, but recently while social distancing outside.
I had a fair amount of anxiety. It kind of feels like the world's on fire right now, honestly. There's just so much going on.
As counselor Joanne Henderson says, especially in times of national crisis, the last thing we all need is for mental health issues to be stigmatized.
I guess I just would want to normalize for folks that this is indeed a really crisis time, and we are feeling kind of traumatized by it all, and that it is good to reach out for help.
For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
Next week, as we continue our series, we will explore how the pandemic and resulting physical separation are affecting the mental health of children and how families can help their kids. Learn more about WMRA's Mental Health Matters series and important resources for mental health at WMRA.org or on the WMRA app. Support for this series comes from WMRA's News and Information Fund. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Tuesday.